From The Conversation, this is Politics with Michelle Grattan, a podcast where Michelle discusses the issues of the day with The Conversation's politics team.
Hi, I'm Judith Ireland, one of the editors at The Conversation. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Judith.
Michelle, there's a new poll out in the Nine newspapers showing once again how women are swinging away from the coalition. And this comes as Julia Banks unloads on the Liberal Party for the way it treats women in her new political memoir. Banks has described Scott Morrison as menacing, controlling wallpaper.
I describe him as like a menacing, controlling wallpaper. He was either doing it through his emissaries or directly.
Michelle, is this likely to do the Prime Minister any damage?
Well, firstly, Judith, it's a great line, isn't it? I'd never thought of wallpaper as menacing and controlling before. But look, it does feed into the general narrative that we've been hearing all year about bad behaviour towards women and the toxic culture of Parliament House. So I think it's the last thing that Scott Morrison would want. Of course, there are two sides to conversations, and they had several conversations after he became leader, after Malcolm Turnbull was replaced, overthrown, and they dispute the tone of those conversations. But having said that, it is not good for him.
Michelle, to take you back to the poll this morning, obviously surveys are picking up that women are trending away from the coalition. Do you think this is going to be an issue come election time?
I think that's a really interesting question and one that we don't know the answer to, because people, of course, vote on a number of issues. They've got a hierarchy of issues. And what we've seen in previous elections, state and territory, in the last year or so with the pandemic, is that the pandemic does have a big effect on how voters cast their vote. So I think that the women's issue will be a secondary issue, could have some effect, but I think that the more dominant issue will be the pandemic and then also the state of the economy, people's judgment about the government's handling of that, and then also the assessment of the opposition, whether Labor has more to offer.
Nevertheless, you'd agree this is something that Liberal strategists would have a keen eye on at the moment, probably tracking it quite closely.
I think they will be worried about it because, remember, this government has an absolutely razor-thin majority, and there's no fat there to say, well, if we lose a few votes on this, it doesn't matter that much.
Michelle, could I ask you about one of the key incidents that's being reported at the moment out of Julia Banks' political memoir, which is she talks about the fact that a Turnbull cabinet minister put his hand on her knee and then ran it up her thigh. Do you think this is getting the sort of attention it needs to and deserves?
Inevitably, it's going to get headlines because it's a sensational allegation and it's obviously bad behaviour. Again, how serious this is in the moment, of course, it's hard to judge, to be honest, because apparently they're all in a room together waiting for a parliamentary vote. This guy was clearly had a few drinks, but it's oafish behaviour. There's no doubt about that. Precisely how much more serious than that we can't actually judge. But I think it is a bit unfair on the other cabinet ministers that there's no name attached to this behaviour, because it does cast an aspersion over them all.
Julia Banks says she has good reasons for not releasing the name. She says she doesn't want this to be about personality. She doesn't want further repercussions for herself. Can you understand that perspective? Can you understand people just thinking, oh, come on, Canberra, this is ridiculous, you know, the stories keep pouring out of here?
Well, I can understand that perspective, but by the same token, if you're making what is quite serious allegation, then I think that there is a case to be said, well, you don't cast this doubt over everybody else, because it's only a group of a bit more than a dozen male cabinet members that we're talking about. So it is sort of targeting everybody.
Michelle, can I take you now to the pandemic? The federal government's just released its 4-stage plan to try and see Australia out of COVID-19. One of the key measures there has been mandatory jabs for aged care workers. They've got to have their first one by September. What do you think about this? Is this a fair, is this a proportionate measure?
I think it is proportionate, and I think the pity about it is that it wasn't made mandatory a long time ago, and also that providers, even when it wasn't mandatory, didn't do more to get their staff vaccinated. They didn't make more special arrangements, because this is obviously so central for the most vulnerable part of the population to be protected. And when staff members are coming in with the illness, often without symptoms, the chances of them giving it to these most vulnerable people are very high. Now, it is right that some people won't want to have it, and that has implications for the workforce, because you could have people opting out of the workforce. But I think it is a balance here. And also, on the argument that you shouldn't make vaccines compulsory for people, that holds for the general population. But if you're a worker in a particular occupation, then I think that there are reasonable requirements that can be made on you, just as these workers, I think, have to have, or most of them have to have, flu jabs.
Do you think that the public largely accepts this? Do you see this turning into a political problem, or is it more of an administrative one now for the government, just getting the jabs in arms?
I don't think it's a political problem, because I think most people, and certainly most people, probably everybody who has a relative or a friend in one of these facilities, would say this is reasonable. Administratively, it's obviously been difficult, because on the latest figures, only about a third of the aged care workforce in residential facilities were vaccinated with a first vaccination. But I think that there is an issue about people opting out of the workforce, and I think that what needs to be done there is much more explaining and counselling of these workers as to what the vaccination involves, and that there's minimal risk in it. And now also the government's provided some financial support, so if they get side effects, and the side effects are maybe inconvenient and uncomfortable, but they're not drastic, but if they get side effects, there's some payment covering that, and there's time for vaccination and so on. So it is an education thing that's needed. Many of these workers, for example, English is not their first language, so you need to provide information in their own language too.
Can I finish, Michelle, by asking you about the travel caps, which have been halved again as part of this 4-phase out of COVID plan?
To temporarily reduce commercial inbound passenger arrivals to all major ports by 50% from current caps, to reduce the pressure on quarantine facilities due to the increased risks of the Delta strain of the virus.
This has received condemnation by international law experts, human rights scholars. Seems to be washing over pretty well, though, in terms of the public and the state premiers. What do you make of this measure?
I think that some of the public feel, oh, well, people should have been home before. But, of course, it's not as simple as that. And some people had work contracts, and they are now expiring. They need to relocate and so on. In terms of blame, I think that both federal and state governments are to blame here. The federal government should have had more purpose-built quarantine places long before this. And the state governments, which were the ones demanding this fall now, I think are being too cautious. Yes, we've had leakages from quarantine, but they're not so serious that this overreaction is justified. Now, we should make the point that the government is boosting those coming on facilitated flights, but that won't make up the difference for this cut in the caps. So I think that we have to really accord people coming from overseas, Australians, citizens, permanent residents, more rights than they're being given, and especially compassionate cases where people have been held up in dire need with dying relatives far too long for inadequate reasons. They have not posed the danger that was being suggested by the sort of bureaucratic response they're running into.
Well, it might be a winter sitting break in Canberra, but there's still plenty happening in federal politics. So, Michelle, thank you very much.
Good to talk. Thanks, Judith.
Our theme music is by Blue Dot Sessions. You can find more podcasts from The Conversation on our website at theconversation.com.